Hello, my friends. For those of you who watch my social media, you know it's been a hell of a week. With my stepfather's passing, my mother got very, very sick, and so it has been a week of caretaking, being tenderhearted, and big long hugs for my mom. And I'm so very grateful once again that I'm here at the house and here to support her with this completely unexpected death. Nobody really thought my stepfather was going to pass away, and it just suddenly happened. All this to say, thank you so much to all those who sent me notes and messages lifting me up and reminding me that I'm loved. This episode marks the final chapter in our October Spookathon, and I know, it is November, but this final episode is meant to honor the Day of the Dead, which happens in November. My guest, Sienna Crist, tells a story of what happened during a séance in a basement and what she experienced there. Now, I myself would not go into a basement, especially for a séance, but a basement affiliated with the Underground Railroad? I think not. Too much history, too much emotion, too much possibility of running into a ghost. And that's exactly what happened in this next episode of Bite Sized Blessings. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the final chilling chapter in our October Spookathon.
So I like to think that I am a caring and creative person who's open to hearing everybody else. One of my biggest things is how much I care for animals. I'm actually literally sitting here with my two dogs right now, just, you know, petting them and hanging out. So I think, you know, I want people to know how much that I'm interested in hearing them and learning from them in whatever situation I kind of find myself in. I am artistic. I wouldn't call myself an artist. I am in a very artistic family. My sister is an artist. My dad's an artist. My mom's a pastry chef. I went to acting school for a minute when I was like right out of high school. That didn't really go too far, but I have then modeled and just surrounded myself with creative people. So
it sounds like, I mean, just from what you've said, that you love animals so much. Does your job or where you're working now engage with that?
Yeah, I'm client relations at a vet office. So I work with you know, owners, but I also work with the animals. I'm the one that kind of greets them when they're first coming in, getting weights, checking in and everything like that. So that's a nice balance between my enjoyment of talking to people and then also, you know, meeting all the animals and everything like that. So
I love that. I've always wondered, because I've had animals in the past and taken them to the vet, of course, but just if you're an animal lover, which I am, working in a vet's office would seem to be like the most perfect place, because you get to meet probably every kind of animal on the planet.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Like I said, with the connection of the people too, you get to kind of see a little bit more of the background of like why the animal is the way that they are, because I pick up a lot on that too. So, you know, if I see an owner who's a little bit more laid back, they're just kind of like, all right, bud, let's go get your weight on the scale. I can tell that usually that animal is a little bit more relaxed and not too freaked out, but there's the people that are like intensely trying to get their dog to sit on the scale, which I'm like, it's okay. They can just stand still. I just have to see the number for a second. And I can tell that animal picks up on that. So that's kind of interesting too.
Animals are so tuned into us, like our vibe. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, they're so tuned into us on this level that I think we as humans don't fully appreciate. And so they will react or engage with the world just based on,
you know, our feelings, how we feel, what's going on in our bodies and our minds. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're truly such sensitive, attuned creatures. And I love that you've noticed that. I mean, you see it every day, day in and day out. So of course you'd notice it. But I think it's something that, you know, I always thought this one cat that I had who was so sensitive and so into me and just so loving, you know, I had a lot of health issues for a while. And I do believe that that cat took on some of my health issues to like process them for me. He eventually passed away of a weird tumor that was like in his jaw or his head or something like that. But it was inoperable. Like they couldn't do anything. But I always felt like he really tuned into me, wanted to make my health issues go away. And those animals that are really our partners that come into our lives, like little lights or little gifts, you know, they want to make everything okay for us, whether it's our, you know, intensity of them sitting on the scale or, you know, helping us feel better so that we heal. I think animals are really, really precious. And if you form the right attachment with the right animal, they can help us in all sorts of ways that I think science is still trying to unpack and unravel. I'm sure you see that all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Well, I want to ask, what's the strangest or most unique animal you've seen in the vet's office?
So currently we don't have a doctor who works with exotic animals. She did leave the practice, but before she left, she did a surgery on a goldfish. It was one of the goldfish with like the large, kind of like ornamental bit on top of its forehead.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called, but it had grown to the point where it was blocking the goldfish's like eyes. And so she trimmed it off. That was probably the craziest thing. I mean, I saw snakes and lizards and, birds and, you know, pocket pets, all of those things. But the goldfish and the fact that there was a surgery on the goldfish, that was crazy. I was raised Catholic. My parents were pretty devoutly Catholic through the time I was like in elementary school. My mom was raised Catholic, a Mexican Catholic family. Her heritage is Mexican. And my dad was baptized and confirmed before their wedding so that they could get married in the church and then eventually raise their children Catholic. So I was baptized as a baby. My sister was baptized as a baby. We went to church every Sunday for, you know, from what I can remember when we were really little. I went to Sunday school and ended up, I don't know why, but I apparently was really good at Sunday school. And so I made my first communion, I guess, a little early. So when I was 7, and at that point we were going to Catholic school as well. So, it kind of was pretty, pretty solid religious experience up until the point where I was about, up until the point where I was about 7 or 8. My mom had a definite connection to Mother Mary, I guess. Kind of, you know, like you said, with, you know, asking about growing up religious and everything, I did think that it was important to kind of note why we stopped becoming religious, I guess, or why we stopped our religious aspect. My mom had a stillborn baby when I was about 7 years old. Obviously, I didn't know then, but apparently my parents wanted the baby baptized. And they were told that the baptism was a sacrament for the living. And since he was born dead, they wouldn't do it. And I'm not sure what that process was like, obviously, because I was a kid and I wasn't anywhere near that. But I also know that the process of having a stillborn baby and grieving parents is a lot different now than it was back in 2000. You know, I've just seen people's experiences where they let you keep the baby in the room in a special cot. There are photos taken. I don't know what the hospital's process was, but it doesn't sound like my parents got any of that. Me and my sister didn't get to see him. The only picture we have is of my parents holding him, so you can't really see him, which I guess that kind of bothered me a lot as a kid, just not being able to really experience that. So my mom definitely had a problem with that. But from what I know, she really tried to just use her faith to get through it. Around the time that I was in middle school, my grandma, my mom's mom, ended up having a very advanced lung cancer, which then ended up going into her brain. And she had really intense chemo, radiation, and everything like that for about a year and a half before she eventually passed away. She was very religious. And so my mom, I'm not really sure what my mom went through in that with her, but I was at the age where I had questions, you know, why would a God do this? Why would, you know, this happen? And for whatever reason, I wasn't able to get the answers that I felt satisfied with. So I started, you know, kind of thinking about other reasons why things like that might be happening and where else I could find answers. Going forward even further, when I was in high school, I came out as gay. And at that time, the church was definitely a little bit stricter on things. This was in like 2010, I guess. And so my mom didn't have a problem with me at all. My parents have always been really accepting of me. But at that point, I hadn't been going to church in years, and I chose not to be confirmed when I was in middle school because it didn't align with me. But at that point, my parents were both kind of like, okay, well, the rules and strict followings don't really align anymore. So both of my parents are spiritual. My mom a little bit more so. We have a few small altar areas in our houses. She lights candles often. But I know that she does everything in her own way. She doesn't necessarily follow strict guidelines or go to church. My dad also is very spiritual, but definitely not in as much of a religious or Catholic leaning way. Raised very Catholic over the course of childhood and middle school and teen years, journeyed away from it.
First, I just want to say how sorry I am about your brother.
Thank you.
And your grandmother, but especially your brother. I feel like just in general, the difference between then and now as far as having a baby that's born stillborn is hopefully, probably not everywhere, but hopefully in most places, is more compassionate and empathetic and more loving. I can't imagine what your parents went through, because that just sounds like a very isolating process. I mean, and especially for your brother. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry. But I totally also your story about just the evolution of religion, your family's relationship to it, and how they've kind of evolved out of it makes sense to me at the same time, because honestly, with this podcast, I've interviewed like 160 people. Almost every single person is not the religion that they started with. They've changed into something else. Mm-hmm. It's very rare for me to interview someone that is still the same religion that they grew up in. So for a whole bunch of different reasons, you know, it's not all like the same reason. How did your parents meet, by the way? I'm so curious.
They were both working at an amusement park in Denver, Colorado when they were teenagers. My dad is only a couple years older than my mom, so he worked rides. My mom worked games, and they literally just like knew each other over the summers. And then after they got to the point of being like in their early 20s, they just kept corresponding. Actually, at one point, my mom ended up living in Florida, and they wrote letters back and forth, and they called each other once a week, long distance. And they literally have just been together since they were teenagers.
I love that story, meeting at an amusement park. I love amusement parks, first of all, but I always have wondered like what it's like behind the scenes. Like how I had a one of my dear neighbors from Portland when I lived there, she worked at Disney World behind the scenes. And the stories are just so raucous and like crazy. But I imagine it was like a smaller amusement park that your parents worked at. Yeah. But I'm sure they have just as many amazing stories. And like as a kid, I would think for the summers, working in an amusement park would be like where it's at. I mean, I was lucky because when I was a kid, we have a massive, massive, I guess you'd call it a swimming hole here. When I grew up in the 80s, it was very different than it is now because it's been a lot has changed there. But when I was there, it was basically like this underground spring that filled this quarry that had been quarried for limestone. And it was natural. They did put chlorine in it to keep it healthy, quote unquote. But 2,000 people could fit in this thing. On a busy day, it was like that big. So we have about 9 or 10 lifeguards on at a time. And, you know, as a kid or a high schooler, like that was the job you wanted. Like that was the cool job. And I think in the deep end, it was like 25 feet deep. So it went pretty deep. But like that was it. But I think second would be amusement park. It would be hard work, of course, but also I think a lot of fun.
One of the crazy things that my dad always told me was that the roller coasters are basically like human powered brakes. So there's like a huge like lever that they pull to make sure that the train stops. And after hours, they would do all sorts of crazy things. They would trap each other on the spinny rides and just like leave. They would see how fast they could get the trains to come into the station before it stopped. It was kind of, yeah, from what I've heard, it was absolutely insane.
I love it, except for getting stuck on the spinny ride and everybody walking away, because I would throw up everywhere. Oh my God, bless the 70s and 80s. Well, I would love to hear your story of, well, whatever story or stories you'd like to tell of your ghostly experience or whatever experience you had, because it doesn't necessarily have to be a ghostly experience. I'd love to hear whatever you'd like to share.
Sure. So I guess kind of a little bit of I guess background, kind of going from how my conversation or our conversation was about religion and spirituality. After I've kind of stepped away from organized religion, I've definitely still maintained very spiritual and open to connection from animals, like we talked about, living and passed on. I'm very open to feelings of people who have passed on, because I really do feel that any kind of universal force, whether people or classify that as a god or a spirit or the universe, I think it is all souls that have died working together. So in that sense, I very much do believe in ghosts. I very much do believe in spirits, family members who can come back in the form of signs or little nudges, animals and family visiting in dreams, all of that. So as a kid, I was always very in tune to that kind of thing. I was always very interested in history. I was one of those Titanic kids who was just absolutely fascinated with disaster, and learning, obviously learning about it, learning how things went wrong. But then obviously just kind of understanding that it was like a great loss kind of thing. So being aware of historical context, when we moved to the East Coast, when I was a kid, in Pennsylvania, there's a lot of historic sites here. Again, because I was interested in history, we went to Gettysburg. We went to different places where there had been other civil wars, civil war battles, Revolutionary War battles, all up and down the East Coast. I went to Ellis Island as a kid, and I experienced such like heaviness when I was there. And I was just always in tune to that. So my most powerful ghost or spiritual interaction would be when I was at a Halloween gathering. I was at an art gallery, and it was in this very old building in Columbia, Pennsylvania, which is along the Susquehanna River. It was an area that was used as like a stop when people were traveling from the south up to Philadelphia, or even up further north. It's a little bit north of Philadelphia, but people trying to get up to New York, it was definitely known as having a few stops on the Underground Railroad and other things like that. So this very historic building that was built, the house I live in was built in the late 1800s. So many houses around here are built, 1700s, 1800s. So this building I was in for this Halloween art gallery party was very old and was known to be a stop on the Underground Railroad. We had somebody there who was a spiritual medium and led a little bit of, I guess, what could be called to get everybody's ears perked up, a seance. In the basement of this old building. And of course, I was super interested in it because I think I was in high school. I think I was probably maybe 16 or 17. And it was an artist that my family had known. So I was at this like party because it was a family friend. So we went down to this basement and, they had all of their gadgets. They had a spirit box, which is the thing that goes through the radio signals and is very like loud. And supposedly they can use the energy. Basically, she kind of just led through some conversations, I guess, and was trying to get anything to come through. There was a lot of like noises coming through on that radio thing, but nothing was really super clear. A couple flashlight batteries went out, and that's like really like, oh, there's something happening. And everybody was, into it, kind of spooked. But I was really just feeling like I wanted to know what people were trying to say. Like everybody was into the fact that the flashlight went off, but I was like, no, I want to know what exactly is going on. So kind of towards the end, the woman leading basically said, we're sensing a lot down here. People have come through. Energy has come through. We want to know if anybody feels comfortable physically opening themselves to any feeling. And she kind of went through and she said, this could be a temperature change. This could be a feeling of overwhelming sadness. This could be really anything. And it's, she made sure to say that she didn't feel anything bad or anything with any malicious intent. And I didn't feel any of that either. I think that you can definitely tell when there's something that's harmful, angry, anything like that. So we weren't feeling any of that. So I said, yeah, I'm open. I'm open to whatever needs to happen. And it was, for me, it was very meditative. I closed my eyes and I really just kind of stood there and I wanted to feel whatever I needed to feel. And I was standing just kind of there, arms down, eyes closed, deep breathing, kind of just trying to be open. And my right hand started feeling absolutely freezing cold. Just my right hand. Started at my fingertips, worked its way up my hand and my wrist. It felt like I stuck my hand like in the freezer, like when you go to grab something out of the freezer and you're feeling that cold kind of come up through your hand. And then it started feeling very tingly and buzzy and sort of like it feels when your hand is asleep. But again, the feeling moved up from my fingertips and up to my arm and into my shoulder. And when it got to my shoulder, that's where it started really feeling weird because it started kind of crossing over into my chest. And that was where I got a little bit uncomfortable because it was really feeling, it was starting to feel very tense. And that's when I noticed that my arm felt like it was being squeezed and compressed from all sides around. It's cold, it's tingly, and it's being compressed. And it's just my right arm. And I didn't want to move my arm at that time. I didn't feel like I wanted to move it. I wasn't trying to pull it away, but I also felt like because of that gripping, I couldn't move it. And I did speak up and I said, I'm feeling something in my arm. I kind of explained. I said, it feels cold. It feels tingly. It feels tight. And she said, are you comfortable with that feeling? And I said, yes.
And she said, if you ever don't feel comfortable, say that you're done and it'll go away. And I said, okay. And I kind of just let myself feel it. And then it started all of a sudden, all of the tenseness became warm. It was still tingling. It was still hugging me, just my arm, but it became very warm. And then it just kind of, poof, it went away. It released all at one time. And I told the woman, I said, I don't know what that was. That felt so strange. And she said, it may have been somebody holding your hand. She said, you seem very open and warm and comforting. And I think it was something holding your hand, somebody holding your hand. And I said, okay. And then when I got home, I started Googling it. And I started Googling, what does it feel like when a ghost holds your hand? You know, and I ended up on Reddit. And I ended up reading other people saying similar things. And, you know, it's the internet, it's Reddit. What does it mean, really? But at the same time, everybody on there was saying, I feel like I'm crazy. I don't know, you know, what I expected, but I felt, you know, this, and it described the same thing. And again, the entire time, it didn't feel mean. It didn't feel malicious. It felt not necessarily comforting, but it felt like it was needing me to be comforting. And again, old building, could have been a stop on the Underground Railroad, could have been a person who lived there. Who knows what it was exactly. But I've never felt anything like it before or after.
First of all, I commend her for going in the basement. Second of all, I commend her for opening herself up to that experience, because I'm sure, as you all know, because I've stated it before, I would not do that. I'm too much of a scaredy cat. So, Sienna, you are a badass. Thank you so much to Sienna for agreeing to be on the show, and thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the October Spookathon, because it's been really fun meeting new people and hearing their ghostly stories. If you enjoy this podcast, please, please do go to the platform of your choice, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and leave a rating or write a review. Those ratings and reviews are so essential to having other people find us. And again, I'm always looking for new Patreon subscribers. My life has been very hectic this last year and a half, and so I haven't been able to keep up with my Patreon as much as I would have liked to. But I promise, within the next week, I'm going to get on top of it, and all those goodies at the three tiers, the $3, $5, or $10 levels, they'll be coming your way. I appreciate everyone for their patience and also for their support. If you'd like to support me on Patreon, below in the notes of this episode, you can click on a link and it'll take you right there, and you can share the love that you have for the podcast by supporting me at one of those levels. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode, Kevin MacLeod. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Size Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to all sorts of groovy stuff, books, artists, playlists, art, all sorts of cool things that I hope lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Sienna. Be a badass. When someone asks for a volunteer for something that might be slightly terrifying, something maybe that happens in a basement, because most times things that are terrifying happen in basements, put your hand up and say, hey, choose me. I'm your perfect, perfect guinea pig. So be like Sienna, volunteer and be brave, never knowing what kind of a very cool and spooky experience you're truly in for.